Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm your host Lenny, and in this episode, it was my absolute privilege to talk to drum and bass pioneer Andy C. He very kindly took some time out of his crazy busy schedule at the end of November last year before setting off on a mini US tour. Andy takes us on a journey through the birth of drum and bass, how the scene has evolved over the last 30 years, the importance of an underground following, breaking Ibiza, the impact of COVID, and the power of human connection. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Can you tell us the first record you fell in love with?
The first song that I can remember, or the first tune that I can remember, like, not really understanding the beats and thinking, what is going on there, was I was down MASH in Oxford Street, and it was a tune called Radio Babylon by Meatbeat Manifesto. Like proper old hardcore tune, but with like the slamming break beats, and that was kind of became a bit of an obsession with me, to be honest with you. I was only about maybe 12, 13 at the time, but I was like, what is that? I want to find out about that, man. So started hunting for it around the record shops and listening to pirate radio, and of course, and trying to work out what it was.
So what were the kind of tunes that you were listening to before you came across Radio Babylon?
My sister got me into the music, so I guess at around that point, you know, I'd been listening to, you know, hardcore house, acid house, and all that. But I distinctly remember this is one of the tunes, not the first one I fell in love with, but the first one was like, I was like, what is that? You know, what are them beats, man? I need more of that. So yeah, that always, that's just a memory that sticks in my mind of just walking around this clothing store and thinking, I need some more of that.
So from Radio Babylon in MASH, how did the birth of drum and bass come about?
Like I say, when I started listening to it, when I started making tunes, in fact, when RAM started in 92, drum and bass didn't exist. And jungle was just coming about. So to be, you know, myself and Ant Miles as Origin Unknown made this tune, Valley of Shadows by Origin, you know, our act name was Origin Unknown. And it became, you know, it was really the tune that sent Ram on his huge path. And unknowingly, you know, just because I was hugely into breakbeats, going back to what I was saying about the Meatbeat Manifesto tune, and then subsequently being a huge fan of Shut Up and Dance and them kind of acts. And I was massively into break. So, and funk records, that we just started, you know, I was just obsessed with putting them in the tunes. And so unwittingly, we made this tune that kind of fit perfectly in with jungle, the jungle scene that was emerging at the time, you know, and it ended up becoming a massive tune for us, and just opening so many doors and met people. And then before you know it, you know, I'm in the record store dropping them off and selling records into Black Market and Unity and Music Power in Ilford, and just meeting all these people, and then ended up being invited to do shows on pirate radio like Cool FM, Weekend Rush, which were the huge jungle stations. So kind of fell into it, you know. Drum and bass came out of that scene in the mid to late 90s.
You touched on some things there like pirate radio that helped paint a picture of the scene in its infancy. How does that compare to today's drum and bass scene?
Well, so there'd be examples of setting up amps and speakers in a cow shed and taking fivers on the door for everybody that's followed, you know, that listens to the pirate radio and followed some instructions and met at motorway services, you know. If you juxtapose that with this weekend, this summer, we did a drum and bass only festival in Clapham Common, and 37,000 people turned up. So it's a little bit, so the, you know, and you know, I you know, and then conversely, you know, first ever club shows I might be playing in front of, you know, at Stoke Newington. There's a club called Prison in Stoke Newington. And Scott put it on. And I think I played in front of about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 people, something like that, maybe a bit less. And then, you know, last month was, you know, privileged enough to do Wembley Arena. It was sold, and it was sold out. It's quite, it's the journey has been, the journey has been crazy to be, to, you know, when you think about to be at the genesis of a genre and see it go from a handful of fans and, you know, you're the only way you could hear it was by tuning into specific pirate radio stations and driving around London and stuff. To now it's worldwide. I mean, tomorrow I'm going on a 5-day tour of America to play out there. You know, we go, you know, now the world's opening back up over, after COVID, we're getting to travel again. New Zealand is its second biggest market. It's like drum and bass is like New Zealand's most, you know, biggest genre. It's absolutely insane. Yeah, they've taken to drum and bass pretty much more than any other genre. It's like, it's completely wild. So when you drive around, I was in quarantine before a tour there in March. And when I came out of quarantine, I got in the car and I'm driving around New Zealand in Auckland. And every other tune on the national radio station was a drum and bass tune, but not just overt, you know, not just commercial ones, like proper bangers, you know what I mean? Dance floor bangers. And I'm like, wow, man, you know, I've been going to New Zealand for 20 odd years, but it's just gone off there. And yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, it's been such an incredible journey and a slow burn journey as well, which I think has helped cement the foundations of drum and bass in a way that not a lot of other genres, that obviously house and techno does, but you know, a lot of some genres come along and they burn really brightly for a short period and go super commercial really quickly and therefore don't have the time or the opportunity to cement the foundations of the underground, which every scene needs. The underground you know, needs the foundations, needs to be able to fall back on the underground when you're not in vogue, when you're not flavor of the month. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. So we've had that in abundance over three decades, which has definitely stood us in good stead.
Yeah, drum and bass seems to be in a really good place at the moment. And as you say, I'm sure it's the underground that's enabled that continual growth over so many years. As an artist, have you had to change or adapt along the way?
I honestly would not, you know, the only adaptation, if you want to call it that, would be, you know, if I'm presented with a situation where I'm playing a festival after a rock band, or I'm doing, for example, I played Exit Festival main stage after Billy Idol. So you got like, okay, you know what we're going to do here. We're going to, you know, it's like, right, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
And then at the same time doing Sonar Festival, I think it was after or before Peggy Goo, you know? So you're in these situations where you're got a completely different genre. So you may have to adapt your set. But that's what a DJ does, you know? But in terms of career-wise, honestly, I think our music has grown so organically, drum and bass, and has brought on new producers that do want to, naturally explore more. You know, when Pendulum come along, there was a more of a rock style to their productions, which brought in a whole new audience. And then we've got, you know, and then nowadays where, you know, people have grown up with it just existing. Now you have singer-songwriters that naturally grow into wanting, you know, that's what they want to be, but they want to do it in a drum and bass world. So we, you know, we've grown with it. And on a personal level, when we've done, you know, we've grown from doing small clubs, you know, obviously Ram grew incredibly well. And we'd be doing the end in London for 1,000 people. Then we moved to Fabric Couple of thousand. Then we did Matter, and on a personal level, taking it and wanting to see how far we can push this genre. You know, we did an Alive show where it's like, okay, let's do more of an AV show built around production and lights. And it was all cutting edge back in like 2010, 11, when we got it up and running. But from an artist perspective, promoters were suddenly like, okay, we'll put this on the main stage and see how it goes. So from, you know, you're going to drum and bass DJ, you're getting main stage. And then it's just grown from there. So we don't want to adapt. We want to grow the music. Let's see how far it can go. Because I understand the passion. All you've got to do is expose the people to it. And the passion is there for the music, you know. And at any festival anybody turns up to, they go to the drum and bass tent or the drum and bass stage. And it goes mental. You know, nobody can deny the energy. They really can't. The energy and the vibe is just insane. So from my perspective, it's just about how can we find ways to get it on them stages to expose as many people as possible.
Jumping back quickly to a point you made earlier about New Zealand and it being one of the biggest markets in the world for drum and bass, can you put your finger on any reasons that might be and why they may have taken to it so well?
Yeah, totally. Well, New Zealand, the thing with New Zealand is that there's such an outgoing people. Everybody always wants to go outdoors and go to festivals and incredible people, you know, so friendly and welcoming to all different cultures that I think that was, you know, the festival circuit over there is insane. When you think of the size of the population versus how many people go to the festivals, it's just mental. But it was probably the radio, just the radio picked up. I mean, we always had the energy at the race, but the radio and the promoters, you know, we'd go back, you know, and when you get them working in tandem and people hear the music on the radio and then they hear it, and then they go out and hear it, that's where the natural sort of, you know what, we're into this. This is cool. Let's see another DJ, you know, let's go to another thing. I guess that's what happened in New Zealand.
Yeah, and then jumping around to somewhere that's been a bit harder to break. What's the journey been like in Ibiza?
In terms of Ibiza, it was tough to crack, you know, and it boils down to certain promoters saying, you know what, we've got Amnesia every Tuesday and we're going to put drum and bass on in there. Because for years and years, we were shut out of drum and bass. I don't know why. You know, I think Ibiza was just sort of like, no, we're house and techno. That's about it. You guys can't have a look in. But, you know, like I say, a slow burn. Everything comes to those who wait, you know, and everything for a reason. And you know, we've done a fair few nights over there now. Ibiza Rocks has been great. Like I say, Amnesia with the Together guys. A residency every Tuesday at a major club like that is incredible. So it is, you know what's funny? That every single person, oh, you're a DJ. You know, if you say, what do you do? I like, oh, you DJ. Oh, I bet you go to Ibiza all the time. Everybody just, the first thing off their lips, literally, is, oh, you must be in Ibiza every, you know, every day, or you must, oh, what about Ibiza? And I think to myself, it's so associated with DJs, it's unbelievable. But from a personal perspective, it's probably the place I go to least in the entire world in terms of DJing, you know? A few times a year for a residency, so it's kind of crazy. I still feel we've got a way to go, but you know, now we've got our own destinations. Like Croatia's fantastic. Croatia's huge for summer festivals and for drum and bass festivals as well, or festivals that would incorporate a large portion of drum and bass as well. Croatia's fantastic for that.
Yeah, Croatia's pretty high on my list of places to get back to now that things are starting to open up a little bit. The pandemic's been tough on everyone. As an artist and a performer, what have the last 18 months been like for you?
Mentally tough, you know, hearing all kinds of stories about people and the struggles they're going through. And it was, it was awful, obviously, as it was for so many people. But from our industry perspective, it was just, decimated it, man, you know, from, you know, people that have been told to be freelance and work for themselves. And then all of a sudden, the government are like, oh, you work for yourself. Sorry, guys, we're not there for you, but we're there for everybody else. Just seemed a bit disposable. So I was so, felt so bad. And we, yeah, it was tough times, man. You know, then as we opened back up, so let's now look on, fast forward to opening back up. Then you've got a situation where this summer has just been absolutely insane, because you've got a whole bunch of gigs that were cancelled from 20. And then you've got the whole bunch of gigs that were then postponed to 21 that then couldn't happen in the first half of 21, that they're happening in the second half of 21. And you've got all of 21. I mean, it was, it's mental. I don't think, honestly, now it's like, wow, man, it's like, it was just the you know, let's think about the positive sides of what came out of it. This summer's been like no other. I mean, the energy on the dance floors and the way people have been going, letting themselves go, going in, insane, has just been beautiful. And sometimes we've been doing three festivals in a day. It's like just making up for lost time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been immense. It's been immense, and it just shows you what, you know, you, I think after years and years, you can not take it for granted, wrong term. It just becomes, it's just there. Next week, you know, you're going to be DJ, you know, like touch wood, you're going to be DJing somewhere. And then when it's not there, it's a minute. But when, boy, we've definitely appreciated every moment this summer.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, from a personal point of view as a punter, I've definitely been making the most of it since things have started to open back up.
You know what I mean? It's like, you have to, right? And that's what I think is, everybody's just thought. I mean, like, everybody, every event is just been sold out in minutes. And people just, you know, just the joy of spending time with other human beings, having fun, experiencing music, experiencing visuals, experiencing, you know, all the other elements that festivals put on to create such a special occasion. You know, I think we've all really, really appreciated that for the past few months.
Yeah, and long may it continue. You know, I think you touched on it.
Absolutely.
That mass human connection is something that you just can't recreate.
It don't matter how many Zoom parties you have. <It's> They normally end up with everybody passed out in front of their screens and a bottle of empty wine in their hand anyway. So, you know, we had a few of them, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, like, there's a time and a place. God, we'll look back on that, won't we? That was what an era that was. But yeah, there's only so many of them you can have when you just need to go out, you know, have a chat to someone in person, give them a hug, have a dance. You know, interact on that vibe is a beautiful thing, man.
So now that there is light at the end of the tunnel, what do you think the future holds for drum and bass, or what do you hope it holds?
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, judging on next year and going into 23, how the festivals are lined up and everything, I think drum and bass is on an incredible curve. It's had a beautiful sort of reawakening at an underground level as well, with, you know, a new subset of artists and styles coming along, which has just been fantastic. So, you know, I know the next couple of years are going to be very, very cool indeed. Obviously, you know, getting to, as the world opens back up as well, I've not played in Europe this year, so it's basically been the UK and New Zealand. And obviously going to America tomorrow, so that, you know, it's going to hold that we're going to be, you know, touring again, fingers crossed. And yeah, I'm incredibly excited about it right now, man. Incredibly excited.
And are there any artists or records out right now that we should be checking out?
Catch me on the up when you ask these kind of questions. There's so many. I don't want to leave any of them out. You know, I always feel like, you know, I know my same answer to this is like, I mean, God, there are so many artists, you know, but what I would just point you in the direction is like, you know, the drum and bass playlists on the streaming, that, you know, the YouTube channels, and that, you know, obviously the radio shows, just to check it out, because you make your own mind up. I mean, yeah. Me personally, I think there's a incredible underground swell of artists. So without having my list in front of me, which would run to dozens, I don't want to leave any out, man. But I honestly feel like now we're in its own, like, obviously, you know, being of a certain vintage, Ram's 30 next year, which is pretty insane. But I feel like our whole genre has been invigorated over the past couple of years by this whole new wave of, you know, young producers and young people that are excited about the scene, that are coming in and injected it with, you know, more fuel to keep it going for another 30.
I can't wait to see what the future holds for drum and bass. Hopefully I'll still be giving it large at the front in 30 years' time. A huge thank you to Andy for letting us into his world. And as always, there are links in the description to the recommendations Andy made. Until next time.